two things. One is I'm going to talk about the issue of depression as a broad issue, and I'm also going to talk about the implications for people of color, especially African Americans. That's an believe it or not, an understudied population.
I think this is the right amount.
Okay, advance away. And this is my financial disclosure. Just note that we have three R01 grants that are involved in studying affective disorder as well as several pharmaceuticals. I just wanted to note that chronic depression itself is now recognized as a worldwide problem. Unfortunately, much of the data that we have is mostly from Western countries, but it's now recognized to be either two or three of the main major causes of suffering worldwide. The recognition is in chronic depression is the recognition that we're now finding that around 10% of the population we suffered at any one time, but we're now seeing that over 20% of those with a single episode of major depression were born to develop chronicity. 76% of those with dysphonia, that is, those will have what we call double depression, and that is major depression plus the dysphonic depression, which is the kind of depression that is what we used to call depressive personality or depressive neurosis. And as it moves forward, let me note then that part of the concern about depression is that increasing evidence that it affects general medical conditions. What we have found is that it is probably one of the most single important causes of death from myocardial infarctions. It is also very common in diabetes and obesity. The question is whether or not the increased risk in obesity is related to its risk in diabetes, and there's now been multiple studies showing that these are independent factors. It's probably a risk factor in breast and other cancers. A recent study claimed that we could not find an effect. Also, we recognize that it's important in stroke, chicken and egg question. It is both common in people who suffer stroke as well as those that who at risk for developing stroke. Some of the more worrisome findings has been the observation that there seems to be a link between depression and Alzheimer's disease. There are now many of us who feel that those people who have major depression are indeed at significant risk. In fact, a more recent study that's not cited up here shows that if you have one episode of major depression, that's 6% risk, but if you have two or more episodes, the risk increases by 6% of each episode you have. Not only do you have changes in terms of cognitive decline once we develop Alzheimer's, but there's also changes in the neural structure of the brain. That's beyond the scope of this study, but there's now increasing evidence showing that depression seems to have a neurotoxic effect in the brain. Now, I mentioned the issue of ethnic minorities because this country is becoming more diverse, increasingly recognized that Western Europeans will be a minority in this country in the year of approximately around 2050, although that's already the case in the West Coast and in the D.C. area. And this is an important implications for depression because several studies have now shown that depression, in fact, may be associated with even worse morbidity and mortality in African Americans. What we're seeing is, I mentioned already, that we're finding that depression is associated with disparities. What we're finding is that many of the disparities that we're seeing seem to be exacerbated when applied to African Americans. That is the increased risk for obesity, increased risk for metabolic syndrome in people who have depression greatly shows a worse outcome. Now, there's now been two major studies looking at depression in the U.S. population, and they're interesting because they both found that there seemed to be less depression in African Americans. The National Comorbidity Study Replication is a door-to-door survey done nationally that used a structured instrument and is generally considered to be probably the best instrument we have. The National Survey of American Life was done to address some of the concerns of the original National Comorbidity Study done by Kessler's group, because it was felt that they may not have gotten adequate numbers of ethnic minorities. One of the underlying assumptions of what is going on, is it that in fact depression is less common, or is there an under-recognition problem? There is now some evidence from our lab and others that show that there may be an under-recognition problem. When you look at how depression is diagnosed, the first question that's often asked in terms of structured interview is whether or not a person has a depressed mood. In order to meet the criterion for depression, the person must also show that they're suffering distress, or that there's some impairment with the depressed episode. When we look at, again, closely at the data done in both the Kessler study and in the Wayham study, we find several points. They both find that African Americans, when they have depression, it is more chronic and more severe. You can interpret it in two ways. One is that the depression itself is worse, but the other is that in order to come to the attention to be able to recognize depression, then African Americans must have more severe depression. What we're finding, though, is that on the other hand, it may be that depression that others have is simply not recognized. Additional evidence comes from two other studies, which show that African Americans seem to have the same rate of dysthymia, but do not seem to have the same rate of major depression. Again, showing that what may be happening is that depression is not recognized when it occurs and doesn't meet the threshold for what we usually have for major depression. The other observation is that when you look at the impairment criteria, you find that African Americans are much less likely to state that they're impaired, even though they meet the other criterion for major depression. Again, suggesting that the criterion we use may be too stringent to recognize major depression in all populations. This then has led some of us to look very closely at how depression is recognized across different ethnic and cultural groups. And some of the work has been done in terms of looking at the question of whether or not there's something about provider information that's causing us to under-recognize depression. And in fact, there's a good deal of evidence that is in fact the case. Some of this work is done by Lisa Cooper, who just won the MacArthur Award, showing that when physicians or other mental health providers work with people of different ethnicities, they often do not respond, or they do not ask the questions in the same way. They usually do not use outside resources, such as family members, to get additional information. They spend less time with the individual. And most importantly, many patients report that the providers themselves often do not show the same kind of respect to them. In addition, the provider output is also determined by such factors as stereotypes, as well as the social distance that exists between the providers and the patients. There are also patient factors as well, and we begin to appreciate culture factors that exist worldwide, but also in the U.S. We found, for instance, that people in many Western African countries do not have a single word for depression, and in fact, the concept of expressing depressive symptoms is often stigmatized. And also, the term guilt in many of these countries is not recognized, and is again because of a focus on community involvement. Shame more than guilt is probably more representative. In the United States, we often find different terms used for depression, such as falling out and so on, that are often not recognized by providers as indicating depressive symptoms. So all in all, we have a good deal of evidence that depression may not be recognized both because of provider factors as well as factors of individuals who have depression. And a key factor also is in looking at where people get treatment. We're increasingly finding that people of ethnic minorities often go for help in different settings. They're much more representative in the primary care setting rather than by mental health providers. And increasingly, we're appreciating the importance of looking at the correctional system. A recent study shows that 50% of people in many correctional systems, even when you exclude alcohol and substance abuse, have an Access One mental health disorder. In addition, about 50% of the people in the correctional system are African Americans. So we have a double whammy in terms of the role of the correctional system as an important source of mental health services. In fact, the Chicago Jail and the Los Angeles County Jail are widely recognized as the two biggest mental health providers in this country. These alternative settings, the primary care setting, which by the way now provides more psychotropic medication than the other setting, and the correctional setting, have a lot of factors that mitigate against recognized depression in those settings. Many primary care providers simply do not have the time to prevent the information. Many in the correctional system, often there's a strong barrier to recognize mental disorders, considering better to be, quote, bad than mad. In addition to the problem of recognition, the absence of recognition often leads to the absence of treatment. We're now finding that African Americans are much less likely to receive psychotropic medication. Some of this is related to community attitudes, but some of this may also be related to provider factors as well. We don't have any data on the availability of psychotherapy. Unfortunately, no company sponsors psychotherapy very much. But there is suggestive evidence that both psychotherapy and psychotropic medications are both unavailable, despite strong evidence that when you provide both psychotherapy and psychotropic medication equally to African Americans and Hispanics, you get the same benefit and as good outcome. We are now at a situation in this country where we're finding strong evidence that some of the treatments that we have are not as good as pharmaceutical companies have stated. We've just recently completed the STAR-D study, which is a major study looking at the use of psychotropic medication as well as some psychotherapy in a large percentage of population, of which 19% were African American. This study was important both in the fact that it was not pharmaceutically supported, not commercially supported, and that it had a large ethnic minority population. That study showed a response rate of 30% at first treatment, but 70% if all treatment options were available. What this study has shown is that we need to have additional research and additional evidence that includes adequate numbers of individuals in of differing ethnic groups, but also studies that in fact have no important commercial interest to depend to affect the outcomes of these studies. In conclusion, let me state that it's very important to recognize that depression has become a major factor in this country, both and worldwide, in terms of its public health significance. But we must be able to treat it and treat it effectively, because it not only will affect the mental disorders themselves, but also has implications for general medical care for all people's thinking.